Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Listeners, we're spending this hour talking about immigration policy. Before the break, we heard from Congresswoman Catherine Clark, who called us after touring a detention facility at the border. While we were waiting for Representative Clark, we had begun a conversation with our two guests. One is WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling, who's in the studio. Shannon, hello again.
Hi there.
And on the phone joining us is retired federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Hello again, Judge Gertner.
Hello.
Before Catherine Clark called in, Shannon, you were in the process of explaining to us how DACA got to the Supreme Court. And you had just told us that President Trump essentially canceled the program in 2017. What happened from there?
Right. So he announced the termination of the program, and immediately lawsuits were filed. Several cases were filed across the country to appeal the end of the program. But before any of those courts could even issue a decision, Trump asked the Supreme Court to rule immediately. And of course, the court declined to do that.
Judge Gertner, so the president essentially tries to bypass the federal courts, asks the Supreme Court, hey, can you rule on this? Why would he jump straight to the Supreme Court? And was it surprising? Because I believe the court rejected his request when he did that.
Because he hasn't done so well in the various courts of appeals, and particularly one of the appeals here would have gone to the Ninth Circuit, which is a court that he has, you know, regularly reviled. So he just didn't want to wait around to lose in the various courts of appeals, which typically give deference to the lower courts. What's happening now is, though, that because the Supreme Court originally turned down cert on the other occasions and now have allowed it, certiorari is the request to go to the Supreme Court. This decision will come down right smack before the election. The oral argument is in October. The likelihood of a decision would be sometime in the spring or June of 2020, which will make it a political football of rather substantial proportions.
Really just before the two presidential conventions next summer.
Right, that's right.
Shannon,
that's
right. Judge Gertner said he didn't want to go to the Ninth Circuit, but he did go to the Ninth Circuit after the Supreme Court rejected his first request. Tell us what happened there.
Mm-hmm. So in November of 2018, the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court in San Francisco ruled against Trump, saying Trump has the authority to get rid of DACA if he wants to, as the executive. But instead, the court really said the legal rationale you've provided here just doesn't make sense. It's not legitimate. It's not strong enough. The Fourth Circuit in Virginia ruled similarly. And as Judge Gertner mentioned, finally, in this sort of dramatic fashion, right before breaking for the summer, SCOTUS announced it would hear the appeal from the government. And so it's consolidating these three cases into one. And as we just discussed, assuming that Congress remains deadlocked on DACA, you know, Congress still has this window of opportunity, of course, between now and when the court would make a decision to try to make some headway on this. I don't think many observers would say that that's a likelihood, but it will come out. The decision would come out just as the 2020 presidential campaign is really hitting high gear.
Listeners, let's hear from you. What do you think about the DACA program and what do you expect from the Supreme Court? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. David from New Bedford is on the line. David, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I really support the DACA program. As far as immigrants collectively go, they're no different a human being than you or I. They go to seek out the best opportunity for them and their family. They go, they work hard. And to be honest with you, I've been working with Spanish and Portuguese immigrants for the last 9 years. They are some of the hardest working people I have ever met in my life. And the Spanish people are the nicer of the two.
David, thanks so much for that call. Judge Gertner, so here's David from New Bedford saying, I completely support this program. One of the things that's most interesting and confusing is that the Trump administration has challenged the program as having been illegal to do in the first place. That seems like maybe a risky approach. Couldn't the administration have ended the program without challenging its legal basis? And wouldn't that make it easier for them to move on other immigration policies?
That's the irony of this. The administration had the same discretion to terminate or to continue the DACA program that the Obama administration did. What they did instead was to say, well, we're going to terminate it, the administration says, because the Obama era DACA program was illegal. So they had the discretion to say, I don't want to do it, and here are the legitimate reasons why we don't want to protect these kids. But instead what they say is, we don't want to do it because the underlying program was illegal. That has two problems. One is it's not true that it was illegal. Any administration can set the priorities for, you know, who they're going to exercise their enforcement power. These are kids in the country who meet certain characteristics, and so a government can say, we don't think it makes sense to use our enforcement resources to kick them out of the country. They could have said, we make a different decision. They could have made a discretionary decision that would have been in the opposite direction if they met the usual challenges. So instead, they don't do. They say the other program is illegal. And in addition, that casts doubt on what they're doing as well. So ironic that they're challenging essentially the executive authority of a previous administration when they are resoundingly using the same executive authority to shape immigration policies as well.
Does that make other immigration policies by the Trump administration vulnerable to the same kind of argument? Is that what you're saying, Judge Gertner?
Well, they certainly expose themselves to it. But this what's so extraordinary about this is that there's a right way of doing this and a wrong way of doing this, and in some sense we've seen this in the Muslim ban, and we've seen this even in the citizenship question on the census. There was a right way of doing it and a wrong way. This was all done seat of the pants based on an analysis of the law which is simply wrong. And in the census case, it was, we'll include citizenship here to promote voting rights, which was clearly pretextual. If they had had a rational process and said, we have different priorities and these are our priorities, they could well have passed muster. But that's not the way this administration
works.
That's
not how they did it. So retired federal judge Nancy Gertner and WBUR reporter Shannon Dooling, we've been talking about DACA and the Supreme Court. Our listeners are calling, and they want to talk about immigration policy. Let's take some calls. Tom from Arlington, good afternoon. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I don't know how it works, but I wonder why we're not seeing the International Red Cross going and looking at some of these detainment facilities or concentration camps or whatever the right term for them is. I know that they're called into or brought into refugee camp environments in places all over the world. Why aren't they being brought in to look at what the conditions are there?
Tom, thanks for that call. Shannon Dooling, WBUR reporter, what do you know?
Well, so the first thought that comes across to my mind is the fact that the refugee camps internationally are just that, refugee camps, and they're run by the UN, the United Nations High Council on Refugee Commissions. I might have that acronym incorrect, but they're run by the UN, and so it's a different authority. It's a different administrative authority. These folks who are being detained in whether it be Customs and Border Patrol facilities, ICE detention facilities, or some of these health and human service facilities, those are strictly under the power of the U.S. government. So different qualifying characteristics, different types of migrants, if you will.
And jurisdictional issues may come into
play
as well. Let's take more calls. Hal from Quincy, let us know what's on your mind. Oh, we might have lost Hal. Let's go to Dorothy from Concord. Dorothy, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm actually from Western New York, but I'm a parish nurse. I was visiting family in Massachusetts for a wedding. And I believe very strongly as a nurse we need immigrants for everything, especially in health care. But I blame Congress above all, both parties, for not compromising like they're supposed to. And I think the Trump administration is trying to get the Congress to act, and that possibly, you know, they're going to the Supreme Court because they won't act. And I really don't blame the administration. I blame Congress. They need to give us a good bill. We need to check out immigrants. I don't want illegal immigrants, quote-unquote. I know that's not a common good word, but we need immigrants big time. So Congress, get your act together, please.
Dorothy, thanks for that call. Let's also hear from Bill. Bill from Newton, what did you call in to tell us about today?
It seems to me that no one ever talks about legal immigration. It's always protecting illegal immigration and the rights of illegal people versus the rights of people who are trying to do it the right way. Why don't we have a look at that? And what do you say to the people that are trying to do it legally and can't versus trying to protect the illegal people?
So, Judge Nancy Gertner, lots there in those two calls about immigration policy, what we're emphasizing, what's working. To the point about Congress versus Trump, the Trump administration has said basically their hands are tied by current immigration law. They have to do it this way when it comes to, for example, their family separation policy. And there's been some implication that they are holding that hard line in order to get Congress to make some moves. Is that accurate, that their hands are tied around border policy and family separation?
Not at all. The immigration law gives essentially every administration a menu. There are violations of law by walking across the border. There are violations of the law by resisting a deportation order. There are various violations of the law that are criminal, and every administration has to decide where they want to put its law enforcement resources. This administration decided that it would enforce really the most minor of immigration violations, which is crossing across the border, walking across the border. That is a misdemeanor. And if you enforce that, if you make that decision, it has implications. And the implications are you have families, you have parents that are separated because there are separate detention facilities for men and women, and you have children that you have to put somewhere. You can't put them in adult facilities because there are constitutional restrictions on that. So the decision to enforce this law, walking across the border is a violation of law, led to the family separation. The Obama administration made a different choice when they understood the implications of a strict enforcement. And the choice that they made was, we're not going to allow this to happen because we don't like what happens when we enforce this policy. So it's a question of discretion. Every administration prioritizes what they want to do. And with respect to legal immigration, by the way, the kids in the facility that Representative Clark looked at, were kids who came here to apply as part of families that applied for asylum. That meant that they were trying to do it the lawful way, and wound up in the situation that they were in. We're dealing with lawful immigration. And with this respect to DACA, you're dealing with kids who were perhaps brought here illegally, but over which they had no control over that decision.
Listeners on this. Oh, sorry. Please finish up.
There are people who are lining up at the border to come in legally. And we are treating them in this fashion.
So, listeners, let us know what you think on this 4th of July week about immigration policy, citizenship, DACA. You can reach us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Shannon, before Judge Gertner there, Bill from Newton asked, well, what about all the processes for legal immigration? What was your reaction to Bill's question?
Right. Well, I was basically just going to double up on what Judge Gertner just said. Having gone to the border, having been in Tijuana back in December, I witnessed this so-called metering process, which is to say, okay, we're holding people who want to come to the U.S. to apply for asylum, and we're giving them a number. It's literally like being at a deli.
And are we holding them, or is Mexico?
They're staying in Mexico, and we're not holding them. No one's holding them in custody. They're just not being allowed to come into the U.S. to apply for asylum. They're being told to wait in Mexico, wait your turn to apply for asylum. It's this attempt to stagger the amount of people that are coming in at any given time. And so, as Judge Gertner said, the asylum process that we're hearing so much about, many thousands of people who are showing up at the border every day are coming to seek asylum. To Judge Gertner's point, these are people who are trying to do this in a legal way.
Thanks for that. Lauren from Milton is on the phone, and I'm going to get to her in just a minute. But first, Judge Gertner, this question of I struggle with how to ask it, but it's this question of the legality of the way we're handling this discretion. So what I'm trying to say is you say, hey, this is discretionary. We have one administration that once they saw the implications of their choices at the border made a different choice. The Trump administration has not made a different choice. They're not troubled by the implications. There must be a legal dimension to those implications over time. We have obligations for how we treat people that are built both into national and international law. Are we entering a realm where those questions will begin to be raised as well?
Well, if the Supreme Court holds here, let's say that the DACA program, that the administration did not properly exercise its discretion because they said the program was illegal when it absolutely was not, and then the Trump administration could come up with a different rationale. Now, they're not free to come up with any rationale and do it any old way. There's a challenge to the DACA program, which isn't going to be coming up before the court now, which is that it has a disproportionate impact. Stopping the program has a disproportionate impact on Hispanics. There is a challenge that has to do with the way that you do this, which is you can't suddenly pull the plug when these kids have been relying on the program for, 2 years. There may be a due process issue. And then there are issues that are coming up with the detention facilities, which is you can't make a discretionary decision when the net effect of that will be the unconstitutional detention of children. That's another challenge. So the administration has discretion to do this. How they exercise that discretion has constitutional limits, and to do it willy-nilly without regard to the human cost certainly can be challenged. That may be the next round of challenges.
That's very helpful, Judge Gertner. Lauren from Milton, thanks for waiting while I got the answer to that question. Welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I've been working with DACA students for about 6 years now, both on the high school level and especially at the college level. And the challenges there, which I think that this has been spoken to, is one, at least in Massachusetts, we have this DACA allows our students to get in-state tuition, which is great, but also they're not eligible for federal financial aid. But also that, at least in my career, I've seen hundreds of DACA students go to elite private colleges, and these students are incredibly talented. And as some of these callers have mentioned, that we need immigrants for workers and things, and I think a lot of times people think of that as like low-wage jobs, but we also just have really brilliant people that are here that have been educated in our system and are being continued to be educated in some of our best systems, and that we have invested in them with our public education from K through 12, and we're continuing to do that. And the issue is what I'm seeing as these students graduate with DACA, they can't get hired by anyone because no one wants to sign on to sponsor them because of this whole political issue. And it's just a major issue for these kids all the way around from college access through college success.
Lauren, thanks for that. Shannon, you had actually interviewed Stephanie Pineda, who we heard at the top of the hour, who was a dreamer in college receiving in-state tuition. You had interviewed her back the day that Jeff Sessions, who then was the attorney general, announced the program was going to be ended. What was that like interviewing her then?
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. I mean, I met her in between classes. She was at UMass Boston. And as you said, it was the day Jeff Sessions announced the end of DACA. And it was funny because there were, balloons in the hallways at UMass Boston. It was this sort of like festive energy, welcome back to classes, students. And here's a Stephanie who was really anxious. I mean, she was visibly burdened by this and kind of checking her phone and trying to keep up on the news. And I remember just being so struck by her carrying that burden, but also being able to maintain such focus. She was determined to get the most out of her time in college. And that was 2 years ago at this point. And she was unclear at that point whether she'd still be able to get in-state tuition. And she had no idea how much longer she'd be able to study. So
what was it like listening to her now today, 2 years later?
I mean, it's funny because Well, for starters, I've heard her evolve into a real advocate. She's really come into her own.
And she didn't even use her first name with you the first time she spoke
with you. Exactly. And she's taken this role on. But she exemplifies what so many other people with these temporary statuses, DACA, TPS, is that the waiting. It's just the uncertainty, the waiting, the anxiety. She has to move forward with her life and live her life and plan. But she's living a gamble. And I just remember that being visible.
Let's hear from another listener. Prashant from Framingham, what's on your mind?
Hi, I just had a couple of comments. One was that every time such a conversation comes up, the point that some people make is, why don't they come in through the legal process? Now, for a normal person who's coming here just for economic reasons, from personal example, I can say that the legal process took me about 7 to 8 years to get a green card. I personally cannot expect someone fleeing violence or persecution for waiting 7 years somewhere just so that the administration can get its act together. And the second point is...
Actually, Prashant, I'm going to stop you there. I really appreciated that, and it's helpful to know about your experience. I also want to hear from Jesse in Medford. So, Jesse, I'm going to let you add your thoughts to Prashant's.
Sure. I couldn't hear what he said, but I'll just say what I had to say. I am related to a person with a disability who is an American, and they would have to live on Medicaid if it weren't for, you know, family that could provide. And the people who are in the community, in the disability community, who are living on Medicaid are in crushing poverty. Many of them just cannot get their needs met and struggle to, you know, keep their heat on in the winter, and it's just a terrible situation. So it's really difficult to hear Democrats talking about, you know, the importance of opening the border to asylees, you know, whom I sympathize with greatly. I'm engaged to an immigrant who has gone through the visa process and just how difficult that's been over the years. It's taken years for them to get through, so I'm very sympathetic. But at the same time, you know, when I think of my relative who would be, you know, when we're thinking about adding asylees basically to the pool of people who would need to draw on our social resources, on Medicaid, on, you know, food stamps, on Section 8, on all the other, you know, programs that would provide for folks who have very little. You know, we're already failing our disabled Americans here at home. And so whenever we talk about Medicare for all and, you know, increasing
Jesse, these thank you. I'm so sorry to interrupt you because I value your comments, but we've only got 2 minutes left and I want to give our guests a chance to respond to you. Shannon Doolin, Jesse says, wait, we don't have enough for our citizens and residents here. Open borders would be disastrous. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think that it strikes me as a common argument, as a common stance, and I think that that's something that perhaps Democrats haven't come to the table to really talk with their Republican colleagues across the aisle, because it's a difficult conversation to have. It's a complicated topic. Immigration law and policies are incredibly complicated, and I think that part of the part of what's going on in Congress is a reflection of that.
Thank you, Shannon, for that. And Judge Nancy Gertner, we will have arguments on DACA coming up, probably, as you said, in October. Just in a few seconds, what do you think you'll be looking for in those arguments, and what should we pay attention to?
Well, I think the timing of the arguments makes a difference. I think that the issue is going to be something we've seen before, which is the reason that they gave is the wrong reason. Will the court give them an opportunity to basically give a better reason? But just one 2 seconds. The asylum issue is a treaty obligation. We cannot close our borders to asylum seekers. The question is, what's the better way of dealing with this? And people have talked about a Marshall Plan for the Central American countries that produce these asylees. So, yes, we're not talking about open borders, but there are ways of dealing with it aside from putting kids in cages.
That's retired federal judge Nancy Gertner. She's a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also WBUR reporter Shannon Doolin. Shannon, thanks for your time as well.
You're welcome.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.